Of Orson Welles broadcast a radio play, The War of the Worlds. The play was about Martians invading planet Earth. It included fictional news reports describing the invasion. Well, many of the radio listeners who tuned in after the play began thought the reports were real, that an invasion had actually begun. A nationwide scare and panic ensued. In many big cities, hysteria was evident in the streets. In fact, the event became infamous. And no one thought it could ever happen again, but it did. For in September 1996, a television newscaster broke into the normal programming with footage of an alien spacecraft hovering over New York City. A White House press conference on the invasion followed. Well, the supposed news report was actually an advertisement for the Spanish release of the film Independence Day. And yet hundreds of alarmed and panicked people swamped the station switchboards. Twice now, bogus reports of an extraterrestrial invasion have created fear and widespread panic among very gullible human beings. Isn't it ironic that the one real alien invasion of planet Earth was barely noticed? On that first Christmas, an otherworldly being visited our planet. The one true God, creator of heaven and earth, landed on the third rock. Emmanuel touched down in a village called Bethlehem. God was with us. But outside of a few cows and some sheep and a few shepherds, no one else that night was aware that the invasion had taken place. Light from another world shined into our darkness. God's Christmas drama has a plot popular among movies and television programs today: an alien invasion. Think of all the dramas that have sort of carried on with that theme, all the way back to Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Men in Black, Mars Attacks, First Contact, The X-Files, Battle Los Angeles, Aliens, The Thing from Another World, etc., etc. I have a friend who teaches preschoolers. One 4th of July, she wanted to explain the meaning of the holiday to her class. She asked, "Boys and girls, can anyone tell me from whom did we gain our independence?" One little boy shouted, "The aliens." When kids today think of Independence Day, they think of invasions from outer space rather than our country's birthday. Yet this was the plot that God had in mind when he developed his Christmas drama. The Christmas story is about an alien invasion. You see, the world we live in, it belongs to God. It was created by God. But with what we've done to it, with the wicked and corrupt and rebellious society we've created on it, God no longer feels at home here. The holy, righteous God is now an alien to our fallen planet. And I'm sure when God looks down on the world that we've defiled, the moral and the spiritual mess that's resulted, he barely recognizes it as his former garden paradise. Yes, on that first Christmas when God came to earth, it was indeed an alien invasion. If God had put me in charge of writing and directing the Christmas drama, I'm afraid it would have resembled the War of the Worlds or Independence Day. I would have had God approaching the earth in a colossal spacecraft. He would hover over the world's capitals with his ray guns pointed at the heads of state. Loudspeakers would shake the earth with a loud warning to repent. Hasta la vista, baby. We could call it Star Wars, the really last Jedi. And when God caught the first glimpse of my rough draft, he would have fired me on the spot. For that is not at all what he wanted in a Christmas drama. Yes, God dreamed up an alien invasion, but not like the Hollywood variety. He inserted a strange, unexpected, never-before-imagined twist into the plot. The invasion God planned was unique and novel. Rather than wipe out the human race, God joined us. Rather than condemn humankind, he identified with us. Rather than destroy the world, he died to save it. Rather than end us, he has given us a brand new beginning. After repeated attempts at inventing the first flying machine, Orville and Wilbur Wright finally succeeded. On December the 17th, 1903, on the sand dunes outside of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, they did what no man had done before. They flew through the sky in a heavier-than-air vehicle. It was one of history's turning points. Their feat that day would totally revolutionize travel. Well, excited about their history-making breakthrough, the Wright brothers, they telegraphed their family back home. Their telegram read, "Success! Four flights Thursday morning, all against 21-mile wind. Started from level with engine power alone. Average speed through air, 31 miles. Longest, 57 seconds. Home for Christmas." Catherine Wright, Orville and Wilbur's sister, was so excited about the news. She was so proud of her brother's achievements. She raced to the local newspaper, expecting the editor to do backflips over receiving the scoop of the century. But after reading the telegram, the editor's only words were, "How nice, your brothers will be home for Christmas." This visionless man had missed the point. He had failed to see the monumental implications of their invention and had focused instead on trivialities. And you see, this describes the world's reaction that first Christmas. Ken Geyer puts it this way, "With barely a ripple of notice, God stepped into the warm lake of humanity." It wasn't just that a baby was born in a stable, in a crowded Bethlehem, and placed in a manger. Oh, no. God did the unthinkable. An alien invasion occurred. Yet instead of confetti and a red carpet and keys to the city and a limousine ride, all God got when he entered the world was a face full of blood and water and a spank on the bottom. A baby was born, but at the time, very few clues were evident of that baby's true identity. An invasion had begun, but in a very unusual manner. Think of the implications, the ramifications. The creator and sustainer of the universe, the one who ensures that the sun rises, that the planets stay in orbit, the one who holds together the nucleus of every single atom, and keeps this physical world from unraveling like a cheap Christmas sweater, became dependent on a young mother's milk. Imagine the Son of God, the Son of the Most High God, umbilically tied to a lowly Jewish girl. The invincible became vulnerable. The Ancient of Days became a child of time. The infinite became an infant. The boss became a babe. God became a man. His name, in fact, Emmanuel, literally means God with us. I'm sure even Joseph and Mary weren't entirely sure of what had happened. I like Max Lucado's description. He writes, "Mary didn't know whether to give him milk or give him praise, but she gave him both, since he was, as near as she could figure, hungry and holy. Joseph didn't know whether to call him Junior or Father. But in the end, he called him Jesus, since that's what the angel had said, and since he didn't have the faintest idea what to name a God he could cradle in his arms." See, God could have invaded Earth in a spacecraft with laser beams blasting, but he chose a stable, a manger, a peasant, a human birth to communicate vital truths. Understand, a plot helps to carry the story's message. How God came to earth, how this alien invasion took place is almost as important as the fact that it did. The way God came answers the why he came. Once a missionary to an African tribe made a tremendous impact on the village. The practical help he offered, along with the truth that he spoke, led the natives to become Christians. Well, at Christmas time, as the season approached, he explained to these new believers how God's gift to mankind should inspire us to give gifts to one another. Well, that Christmas morning, one of the villagers presented the missionary with this magnificent seashell. When the missionary asked where he had found the shell, the man told him of having traveled many miles through deep, snake-infested jungles to a particular bay where these unique shells could be found. The missionary hugged the man. He thanked his friend. "I'll treasure this gift for the rest of my life, but you didn't have to go such a far distance and brave such dangerous elements to get me this gift." That's when the native's eyes lit up. He explained to the missionary in his broken English, "Long walk, part of gift." And this is also true of God's Christmas gift to mankind. The long walk was part of the gift. That God descended such a far distance from his throne in heaven to a rock-hewn manger on earth and risked such danger, an unsupervised delivery, an unsanitized manger, the unbridled jealousies of a wicked King Herod. This was all part of the gift. You see, the way God came explains the why God came. He came out of love. He came to learn, and he came to lift. J.B. Phillips, he writes a fictional tale that speaks of God's love to us. Two angels had taken a tour of the universe. After whipping through galaxies and fleeting across vast expanses of space, marveling at the boss's creation, the two companions, they slow down. Phillips writes of their conversation. "As the two of them drew near to the star, which we call our sun, and to its circling planets, the senior angel pointed to a small and rather insignificant sphere turning very slowly on its axis. It looked as dull as a dirty tennis ball to the little angel, whose mind was filled with the size and glory of what he'd seen. 'I want you to watch that one,' said the senior angel, pointing with his finger. 'Well, it looks very small and rather dirty to me,' said the little angel. 'What's so special about that one?' His senior angel said, 'That's the famed planet, what angels call the visited planet.' The little angel replied, 'Do you mean that our great and glorious prince went down in person to that fifth-rate little ball? Why should he do a thing like that?' His face wrinkled in disgust. 'Do you mean to tell me that he stooped so low as to become one of those creeping, crawling creatures on that floating ball?' The senior angel, in a stern voice, he rebuked him. He said, 'I do. And I don't think he would like you to call them creeping, crawling creatures,' in that tone of voice. 'For as strange as it seems to us, he loves them. He went down to visit them, to lift them up, to become like him.'" J.B. Phillips concludes his fictional story in an interesting way. The little angel looked blank. Such a thought was almost beyond his comprehension, as it is ours. The Bible tells us, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." The Christmas drama is an alien invasion, all right, but it's not an invasion of mass destruction. It's an invasion of massive love. Who would have thought God's response to the rebel planet would be to love? God didn't come with ray guns blasting, but with angels singing. He didn't send Jesus to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. God sent Jesus to us to show us his love. The angel's appearance to the shepherds is probably about as close as the Christmas drama gets to an Independence Day type scene. The vulnerable shepherds, armed with mere staffs and slingshots, possibly just kids. They feel a breeze. Dust kicks up around their feet. Before them, the skies peel back, revealing a pulsating glow in the sky. They behold a mighty angel decked out in full cosmic armor. Luke 2, verse 9 describes the event. "And behold, an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were greatly afraid." I bet they were. They were probably as scared as if they had just seen a spacecraft hovering over the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. But the angel told them, Do not be afraid. For behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which will be to all people. For there's born to you this day in the city of David a Savior who is Christ the Lord. The alien communication is, don't be afraid. God is on a mission of love. This invasion is about good tidings of great joy. You see, the Christmas plot teaches us that Jesus came out of love. But he also came that he could learn. God became a man to become acquainted with the plight of all men. God knew of our dilemma, for God knows all things. But that wasn't enough for God. He wanted to feel. He wanted to empathize with our circumstances. He wanted to see it from our vantage point. God desired to experience our troubles up close. Hebrews 4 verse 15 conveys a truth that no theologian fully understands. It says, "For we do not have a high priest, that is Jesus, who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin." Jesus became a man to understand all men, the human dilemma. The God who knows no bounds took on our limitations. He felt firsthand the dynamic of our pain. One day, little Sarah, she got too close to the flames of a fire that her dad had burning in his backyard. Her pants caught on fire and the flames scorched both her legs. Sarah grew up with these ugly scars on her legs. They looked like little lines running through a jigsaw puzzle. One day, her daddy asked Sarah, if she could have one wish, what would it be? Sarah replied, "I would want everyone to have legs like mine." You see, even more than new legs, the answer to this little girl's pain was empathy. She longed to be understood, for someone else to know how she felt, to let her know she would be okay. See, here is a need that bubbles up in every human heart. We all need to be understood. We all crave empathy. Once there was a conservative, well-dressed, prim and proper church. It was situated right across the street from a secular university. Well, the church, they wanted to begin a ministry to college kids, but they didn't know how to start. One Sunday, a student named Bill, he visited the church. This Bill, he had wild, frizzy hair. He owned one pair of dirty jeans and three t-shirts. That was his wardrobe for 4 years of college. Rarely did Bill wear shoes. Imagine the stir when barefooted Bill walked into the church one Sunday. He came in 10 minutes late. He planned to sit in the back, but there were no seats. And so he started down the middle aisle looking for a place to sit down. The closer he got to the podium, the more uncomfortable the crowd became. By the time Bill made it to the front row, no one was listening to the pastor anymore. Every eye was on Bill. Well, unable to find a seat, Bill plopped down on the floor right in front of the pulpit. Well, just as Bill sat down, a dignified, stately gentleman wearing a three-piece suit, he started down the aisle after Bill. This man was a pillar in the church, the head usher that day. Everyone knew there was no way this man would put up with a barefoot, scroungy college kid sitting in the floor in the front of the sanctuary. But as he walked toward Bill, the crowd held its collective breath. Everyone was expecting a confrontation. Even the pastor paused. But when the older gentleman reached Bill, with his creaky knees popping, he knelt down and he took a seat on the sanctuary floor right next to grungy old Bill. The man explained later, "I just didn't want that young fella to sit alone. Trust me, there wasn't a dry eye in the house." After the service, the pastor made the comment, "What I preached today, no one will ever remember, but what you saw, no one will ever forget." And that is exactly what happened in this drama we call Christmas. The venerable gentleman, the dignified, glorified God, walked down the aisle and he sat on the floor right next to the grungy college kid. That's us. God didn't want us to sit alone. He humbled himself. He became like us so we would know that he truly understood. God invaded planet Earth in such a surprising way to show us His love, to learn of our plight, and finally, to lift us from our sin. The nature of this child's mission was communicated by his name. The angel told Joseph, "Call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." The Hebrew name Jesus is Yeshua. It's a derivative of the Hebrew name for God, Yahweh. The name Yeshua literally means Yahweh is salvation. Don't tell me that there is something you've done that Jesus won't forgive. Stop listening to the scoffers and to the skeptics. Don't succumb to the doubts that keep ricocheting around your mind. God says your sin is not unpardonable. You're not the one exception that He can't forgive. You're not the one person that He can't pardon and change. Don't let the devil smother you under a blanket of guilt. Here is the Christmas message. God and Son are in the salvage business. Jesus is willing to pick your life out of the scrap heap. He's able to dust it off and clean it out and make it new again. Jesus Christ specializes in restoration projects. That's you and me. There is a famous painting by William Holman Hunt. It was painted in 1873. Hunt titled it, "The Shadow of Death." Jesus is a young man at this point. He's helping in his father Joseph's carpenter shop. It's late one afternoon, and Jesus rises after several hours of intense work to stretch his arms. The sun is sinking in the western sky. Its rays slant through the door and cast a shadow on the wall behind him. It appears as if Jesus is hanging from a cross. And this was the destiny that hung over Jesus' whole life. From birth, Jesus was the man who was born to die, not for himself, but for the sins of the whole world. Jesus' long walk from the halls of heaven to the dusty streets of this earth was to position himself so that he could work a permanent solution for our sin. For as a human being, Jesus could die for all human beings. He became a human so he could die for us. Jesus did the heavy lifting for us all. He lifted our burden of sin. He set us free from its penalty and its power. Imagine a game of touch football in your backyard. The opposing team is winning. They're exchanging high fives. As a matter of fact, they're kind of cocky. They're up by 2 touchdowns. They think they've sewed up the win. When all of a sudden, up walks Matt Ryan, the reigning NFL MVP. Matt asks about the score. You tell him, and he decides to join the team that's behind by 2 touchdowns. That's your team. The MVP quarterback is now on your team. Well, you know what happens instantly. The tide turns. The momentum shifts. Your team is now the enthusiastic one, while your opponent has been instantly demoralized. The handwriting is on the wall. No way a bunch of wannabes are going to defeat Matty Ice. Well, Christmas means that God has entered our huddle. He has joined a team of never-wers and couldn't-bes to lift us up on His ability and to lead us to victory over our sin and our despair. Christmas, my friends, is the momentum changer. God is now on our side of the ball. God is now wearing our colors. Victory for us is now a foregone conclusion. This Christmas, we all should remember, long walk, part of gift. How Jesus came to earth explains why He came. God's Son entered the lowest door. He stepped into the muck and mire we all have to deal with. And He did it because He wanted us to know His love. He wanted to learn our plight. And He wanted to lift us from our sin. An alien has invaded. And Jesus wants to make His home in your heart. This Christmas, let Jesus join your huddle and make the difference in your life.